Welcome to Thrive, Mental Health and the Art of Living Free. I'm your host, Melissa Clark, a professional counselor in the Dallas area with a passion for helping you overcome challenges, process painful emotions, and understand your God-given identity. Thank you so much for being here. I believe listening to this podcast will leave you feeling excited, educated, and empowered. We are in the middle of a series talking about hard things. I feel like we are all collectively experiencing hard things, whether it's the aftermath and really living in the midst still of a pandemic, or maybe you're going through a health crisis, financial stuff, relationship challenges, whatever it is that you're going through, we are all going through something. Last week, we talked with Sheila Walsh, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I love Sheila. I've known her for years and years, and she, for me, is just like a positive voice of reason. I love her openness and vulnerability. So if you did not get a chance to listen to that episode, she openly shares about her battle with depression. And I love the way she talks about both the Bible and using medication, because I believe in both. And I feel like she just really gives us a great approach from a biblical point of view about ways to hold on when you want to let go. And today we are in for another treat. We are talking with Lisa Whittle. I feel like to know Lisa is to love Lisa. I know her through a thing called Creatives, and it's a teaching for writers and speakers, a community of women. So if you're wanting to be a writer or a speaker, a little plug for Called Creatives. But Lisa is, she's a writer, she's an author, she's a blogger, podcaster, all the things. And we sat down to talk about her new book, The Hard Good: Showing Up for God to Work in You When You Want to Shut Down. Hello. I feel like that's so relatable. We all feel like shutting down, whether it's in this season, past seasons, or future seasons to come. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Lisa. I want to welcome to the show Lisa Whittle. Lisa, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I am super excited about our conversation. Let's just start off really big picture and tell me about your new book, The Hard Good. When did you start the journey? Like, tell me all about it.
Started the journey probably, goodness, my whole life. I don't know. You know, the book in particular really came to me after my dad died in 2017. And he was my favorite person. He was also a very restless person. I watched him sort of wrestle his whole life. He was a pastor. Yeah, super restless. So we moved around a lot as a result. And so for me, I watched this man who was really, really capable and God used in many ways, but also just had a lot internally going on. So after he died, I felt like the Lord was saying to me, Lisa, what are you going to do with all you know? And it was like, you've been in the front row watching this sort of man's struggle. And then also, he and I were very similar in many ways. And so it didn't escape me that a lot of his tendencies were also mine. But even separating, where does he start and where do I begin? That whole legacy and DNA piece that I think a lot of us have to sort through, that was also a part of it as well. Yeah. So it was sort of like historically my own tendency, which was to run away from hard things. And so I felt like the Lord wanted me to talk about that, but also I was honestly diving into the Bible and reading about King Saul and his tendencies there. All of that together was looking at this picture of what happens when you run away from the hard things in your life rather than allowing God to use them to spiritually transform you.
I think that's our tendency and our nature. Is to run, is to hide, or, you know, from a trigger trauma response, fight, flight, freeze. And so I love that idea of staying close and also pausing. And is that the heart of how the hard good came to be? I'm curious about that phrase and where that came from.
Yeah. Honestly, that phrase about that same time just sort of popped into my head. I really do feel like, because faith informs everything I do, I do feel like the Holy Spirit gave it to me, because it was this sort of perfect picture of the things in our life that are difficult, but also can be spiritually transformative. They can be transformative to a person. They don't have to be, because we do have choice in that. So, right, you can allow God to use them to shape you in those ways, or you can choose the other option, running away, numbing out, whatever the case may be. I've tried all of those things, by the way.
Same.
Yeah. But like hard, we don't really have to define that, but what's hard good? And I don't think that everything in life that's hard is as equally redeemable. That's my theory. I don't really believe that everything is on the same playing field and it changes us in the same way. So in chapter 10 of the book, I actually talk about two things that I gave birth to in the year 2000. One was just hard and one was hard good. And it's sort of a silly illustration, but I hope maybe it crystallizes in people's brains what I mean.
Ella, so, yeah, well, illustration.
The hard was a kidney stone. I was literally 7 months pregnant with my second son, and I thought I was going into back labor, but I wasn't. But I went to the hospital because I thought, oh, I'm going into back labor. I'm having this baby. And if you've ever had a kidney stone, you know that there's literally no relief for a kidney stone. It's not like contractions that kind of that come and go. It's like this dull pain that you can't get any relief from. I was climbing over the seat of our van trying to find a good spot that would give me relief. Well, none would. So I passed the kidney stone. So I'd say like I gave birth to this kidney stone in 2000. That was just hard. I can't find any redeeming quality about that. Like to this day, I'm like, was it hard good? No, I think it was just hard. But I gave birth to my son 3 months later or 2 months later. It was actually almost 10 days late. And that was hard good. It was a very hard labor. It was really, really painful, but it was good. It was hard good. So that's what I mean when I say, here's something hard that I don't really find redeemable. And here's something hard good. And I do think our life is full of those things. That's why the particular things that I talk about in the book are the things that are, they have to qualify for both.
Do you feel like anything can become a hard good, or are there just some things that are just hard and they're just bad?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about that. I think things could become a hard good. Yeah. Because I think hard things, it could be used by God to spiritually transform us, even if they seem to not be redeemable at all. Like there seem to be in our human brains, not a way that they could be come for our growth, but God has this sovereign lens that he looks through. And so could he take that and make it for the better? Sure. Yes. I don't know that we'll always recognize it though. Yeah. I don't know that every hard thing we would be able to go, oh, yeah, I see it. That became a hard good. No, I think some things we may just never know until we get to heaven how it was actually good in our life.
I agree. And as we're kind of like veering down this path, which I didn't expect, which is why I love conversations, it makes me think about like the phrase toxic positivity that we see online. And that's not what your book is about. It's not about just being positive. It really is empowering to have that perspective that there could be something good in the midst of this.
Yeah. The thing about it is people who know me know this to be true. And the people that don't know me, I can only just tell you what is true. And you could feel free to ask anyone in my life, not that you have the time or the desire to do that. I'm a skeptic myself. I come into so many things from that lens. Like I don't want to say I can't help it. I probably could help it, but to a degree it is part of my natural personality, right? So, and I've been down the road a bit. I'm not young, and I've also been through hard things with people. That does inform a lot of your lens. And I write this from that perspective. You know, maybe in this weird way, that's why God would have me write a book called The Hard Good, because I don't come from this sort of perpetually positive Pollyanna sort of perspective. That's not where I come. And for me, this message is hard fought. I preach it as I learn it, that God can, in fact, make good of things. And I can't tell you how many times along the way, and even after it's been released, I've had to pray and say, God, convince me, keep convincing me, even though you don't have to prove that to me, but I know you love me and I know you want me to believe that this is true because you're good. Keep convincing me that this this is true, that this message that you burned at my heart, that I do believe at my core, but sometimes as a human can still doubt, keep convincing me that it's true. And God does. He keeps showing me that it is. And so, no, this is the farthest thing from just a toxic positivity message.
I didn't feel that at all in the book, but as a, like, can anything be hard? And I think as Christians, we're so quick to slap around that Romans 8:28, all things work together. And I love how you took a little pause with that and how things really can come together for good. And it's like that it's good for the sake of being good, but it really is like this wrestling of working things together and this idea of acceptance. And I feel like that from a therapeutic point of view is really important to me that we would find acceptance. And I love how you started with this idea of radical acceptance of things that aren't, they don't seem good. They seem bad. They seem hard, bad, not hard, good.
Yeah. You know, I had to start there because for me, that has been one of, and you, I'm sure as a counselor could hear that it, as you read.
Oh,
that,
no, I'm that, underlining. I'm like, oh, that's good. That's good. That's good.
But I mean, honestly, I'm pretty open book. You can hear how that has been a struggle for me. That's why I started there, because for me, acceptance has been such a difficult place and continues to be. Like that's a work for me. That's a work of my life. That's the work with the Lord with me of my life, is accepting things that I wish were something different. Because, you know, my personality is one that it's like, no, it can be done. It can be changed. It can be, you know, that I come from that place. Right. And I've always, like, in my family, I take on the role of strength. And so I've been that for a lot of people. And sometimes when you are that, it's a lot of different things. But one of the things that it is you develop this, it's not a denial, because I'm very, very aware, but it's more of like a refusal. It's almost like a resistance that becomes, it really gets in your way, because acceptance for most of my life, it's like I've been conceding that something in my life has won and has beaten me. And that's hard for me to take. Because I don't want to be beaten by something. But the reality is, and you know, different personalities approach this in a different way, you know, because you've counseled all kinds of people. For me, that's the way it manifested. For other people, it might be, you know, accepting something in a little bit of a different way. But however it manifests, it's all about control, really. And thinking that somehow we can turn back the hands of time or control what's happening by our refusal to accept something, all it ends up doing is just causing further wounding to our own soul. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. One of the chapters that really drew me in is making peace with life when it's brought loss. To me, this chapter was all about finding goodness in grief. And again, those are two words that just don't seem to go together. And grief is something I just feel like we as a society are dealing with, from whether it be the pandemic or a job loss or health or marriage. It just seems like there's like loss after loss after loss. And one of the statements you write that I loved is you said grief and joy can exist in the same space. And I think there's such beauty in that, like such a tiny little statement, but can you explain what that means, that grief and joy, that they can actually like live together, they can coexist?
Yeah, this is really important, because if we don't believe that, if we don't believe that that we live in the tension, then I think what's going to happen is we're going to maybe be worried about our life unnecessarily when we do have that tension, and we're going to think something's crazy wrong with me because I am, you know, I feel both of these things. You know, sometimes I've literally been crying and then 5 minutes later I've been laughing, and it's both a release, you know, both of those are a release. The thing is that God has made us multifaceted. So grief and joy so often, you know, coexist and co-collaborate, I guess is the way I want to say it, as you walk through life, because every moment has both of those in it. I literally will read a message from someone, I'm not kidding you, that is so deeply touches my heart because of the depth of pain in it. And I mean, I've served in ministry my whole life, and I've helped you know, other people in ministry and walked alongside them for so many years. But I don't think in all of my life, and I bet you would attest to this as a counselor, in all of my life, I don't think I've dealt with so many people that are dealing with multiple hard things at the same time, yeah. Right? I bet your counseling practice is
layer
full.
After layer.
Layer after layer. Yeah.
So much.
Right. And so I think what we keep hoping is that somehow it's just going to be the joy life. It's not going to be the grief life. And so I think what we've got to come to is this reality that, you know, every bit of our life is going to have both of those in it pretty much all the time, because this world is imperfect and fallen. And that's why I had to clear up early on in the book what good even was, because we've bought into the, sort of this culture's idea of good. And because of it, we've gone our whole lives thinking, oh, I've done something wrong. I've missed the instructions for the good life. We compare ourselves to other people because our life isn't good at the moment or whatever. And I just want people to know the reason why is because life is hard. And this is the imperfect life because we're not in the perfect one yet. That's heaven. And so I want you to feel normal about that, you know, and that you're going to cry one minute and maybe the next minute you're going to grieve. That is the full scope of living. And we don't love that because it's a lot, but it is a lot and it is the fullness of life. And so grief and joy, they coexist. I mean, I'm living it. My mom married someone who has a ranch, and we go out there and I go out there, and very early on into their marriage, I decided that I was going to make trips out to the ranch, even though I have to tell you, it's painful for me because going out there reminds me of my dad, who would have loved to have a ranch in his mm-hmm. life because he loved the outdoors. He loved to hunt. He loved all the things that my bonus dad loves too. So I made a conscious choice early on to walk through that grief rather than avoiding the ranch, which honestly I've kind of wanted to do. But there's a reason why both of my Bible studies were filmed at one of his ranches, because I needed to be there. I needed to sit in it. It's helped me heal.
Yeah. Well, I think if we just wait for the joy to happen, like you're saying, there's always hardships with every day. And as you were sharing, I can't help but wonder if we just try and skip through the grief, if we then actually miss the joy.
Mm,
you know what yeah. I mean? Like, if we're not really willing to sit and wrestle with the hard, I wonder if we can ever really find the good.
Well, that's it. Because I can tell you, I'm going to cry. I know you bring this out and people, you're a counselor.
I love tears. So.
But that's the truth though. This is exactly what's happened to me. As I have celebrated something that's painful for me, which is my mom remarrying, I've become a better person, and I've also been able to help other people through it. And I found this wondrous joy in like going to the ranch, you know, again, you know, as I've sat out there and as I've, you know, preached out there and as it's been hard for me and painful for me. With everything that I have preached out there, there's been a release of the pain and there's been joy. I mean, I can't tell you when I go out to the ranch and I ride around, and let me just paint the picture for you. It is hot out there. This is near the border of Mexico. I mean, it's really, really hot.
Yeah.
It is really hot. Many times the animals are hiding and you don't even, you know, it's not like animals just come running and you feel like you're in this great safari or whatever. A lot of times we are riding down in my bonus dad's Kawasaki on dusty roads that are kind of barren, mm-hmm. but I can't express the joy that I feel like. It's my favorite place to go. And I know it's because something supernatural happens for me. It is a sign that God actually can work in me and that God has worked in me and that I've come a very long way.
Mm-hmm. It's a holy space, isn't it?
Yeah. Very holy space, mm-hmm. very holy space. And I feel my Father there. I feel my Heavenly Father there. I more than I can even tell you, I feel my Heavenly Father there.
Yeah. So I feel like somebody just needs to hit pause for a minute and like, let that sink in. That in order to feel true joy, which we all want to feel joy, we all want to feel happy. you know, not all happiness is actually joy, but in order to really feel the true joy, it's about leaning in and experiencing the grief. And it's yes. in that sweet spot that we actually get to really encounter God, I feel like, in a real way.
So true. Yeah, it's so true.
So you wrote this other little nugget of a statement where, you know, I look at this from the counselor lens of, you know, there's five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. So you said, what if your anger isn't really anger? What if it's love turned to hurt? And I thought, ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I think, especially in our Western culture, we want to skip over our grief. We don't want to feel sad. We don't want to mourn. We want to feel sad for maybe like a week, but certainly like a year later, 3 years later, like, gosh, I should just be over that by now, and it can fester and become anger. And so I'm curious, like, what do you mean by that? Like, what if your anger isn't really anger? What if it's love turned to hurt?
The thing that comes the most to my mind when I was talking about that was my experience with the church, because I grew up in the church. My father had a very public ministry fall as a pastor. And subsequently, I had to sort through a lot of feelings about both him and the church, because I had a lot of people in the church that I loved who sort of didn't stand with us, or didn't even talk to us anymore, yeah. which is such a deep place of wounding when you are a young woman and really you did nothing except for just love your dad, you know?
Or be his daughter.
Yeah, just be his daughter. And so it, you know, is really hard, really confusing. And so I really relate to people who have felt particularly wounded by people or by the church, because what I realized was the love that I had for the church turned to hurt. It was able to hurt me so much because of how much I loved it. And then there were moments in my life that it came out as anger. So I was so angry at the church that the church could hurt me and my family that much. But if I really went back to the roots, historically, it was love.
Yeah.
It started out as love. I loved the church. Like, the church was my favorite place to go. I felt safe there. I felt it was my home. I mean, you know, in my era when I grew up, I mean, we were at the church 3 to 4 times a week at least.
Same.
And so, yeah. So for me, it was my place. It was my home. I was there almost as much as I was actually like home. And so
everyone knows your name.
Yeah. And so I loved it so much. So you can imagine when you love someone or something so much, it has that ability to hurt you so much. And then it hurt me so much. And then I got mad at it. And so in the end, I think a lot of people who are walking around saying, I'm mad at the church, or I hate the church, or whatever the words they say that are really strong about the church, what they really are saying is, I love the church so much, it hurt me. And I want people to hear that, because what happens is, I mean, I feel so strongly about this. So many people get really up in arms when someone talks about the church in a way that's really, I don't know, aggressive or whatever. And they're like, oh, you know, you shouldn't say bad things about the church. I want people to understand there's so much love there that turned to hurt. Why can't we see past this anger and realize what it really is? Because we could do ministry there. And that's what I really want people to understand about it. Mm-hmm. That it really starts off as love turned to anger.
Mm-hmm.
Turned to hurt.
We don't expect it to be that way, you know?
Right.
We think that church people ought to be good people and it should be a safe place always. And it's just not that way.
Right.
You write about how important it is that you don't have to agree with the loss to make peace with it. And that seems to be resonating as we're talking about church hurt, is we don't have to agree with things to bring peace with it. Do you feel that making peace with our loss is the ultimate goal? Or do you feel like it's acceptance? Like, is it finding the good? Like, what's the end goal or the mark, if there even is one?
Yeah.
When it comes to grief and loss?
That's a great question. I think it's all of those things are kind of the same. If, yeah. you know, as you say, and you're like, is it acceptance or is it making peace? I think kind of those are the same, honestly, because you can't make peace with your loss mm-hmm. unless on some level you accept it, right? otherwise you're just going to keep wrestling. Mm. And I think that's why the acceptance chapter had to go first, is because everything else that we talk about in the book, if the acceptance piece isn't there, whether it's being upset or disappointed that you didn't get something that you really want, or knowing that you, the power of first apology, like I talk about in chapter 9, or whatever the case may be, waiting, whatever, like acceptance is sort of the key to everything else, I think. I just know that when I talk to people who have faced really deep losses, and certainly my father dying in 2017 is a very deep loss to me. There are people that are grieving many, many things, perhaps deeper, you know, a loss of a child, certainly in my mind is on up there. And I don't want to presume what for them would be the greatest place to get, but I would think when your life goes rogue, you know, when it goes off the rails, it goes rogue and it doesn't cooperate with the way that you've planned it, there has to be, you have to make peace with it at some point. And whatever that looks like for you, I would say there has to be a making peace with God, making peace that this is what it is. Not it is what it is in the sense of like resignment, but like
surrender.
Surrender. I mean, I talk about in chapter 1, the stifling what ifs, you know, what if I, what if they, what if God, trying to rewrite history in our brains. So to me, I feel like those stifling what ifs have to be removed from that constant dialogue in our brain. Otherwise, you can't make peace with it. Yeah. So I don't know exactly what that looks like for someone who's suffered a deep loss. But what I do know is they have to make peace with it or they can't go on.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
yeah, and I love how bluntly you state that. And because I think when there is a deep loss and just like trauma, there's all different levels of trauma and all different levels of loss. We still need to be able to make peace with it. Otherwise we're not really living.
Right. And that is the one thing that struck me is when, you know, when you're still here and you're still living, but it's more of an existence and you're not really living, then that's no way to live either. You know, I think sometimes we feel like if we really, really loved someone, that we prove it by not being okay. But actually, we're still here. So honoring them well is moving on and being, not moving on from them ever. We will never do that. But moving to a place in our life where we are able to live and we honor them in that way, because it's almost like a gift they give us to continue to have what's left of our life now to really, really matter. And I think another thing that struck me too is when my dad died, I realized that the one thing I had to come to the place of was being almost even happy for someone else, him, for something that was better for him, but not better for me.
Yeah.
Because in every way, if I believe the Bible, right? If I believe heaven, if I believe the Bible, then I believe that heaven is the better place. That's what I preach. That's what I believe. So then where he is better. I'm just saying this logically. I mean, I'm a very logical thinker. So where he is better, but he doesn't feel better for me. So it's like, I had to come to this place where I'm like, I have to accept something that is better for someone else that is not better for me.
Yeah.
And that is a part of grieving, or it has been for me.
Yeah. My favorite definition of grief that I did not come up with, I have no idea where I found it because I've had it with me for so long, but is accepting something that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
It'll never be okay. It'll never be okay for you that your dad's not here, even though it's very okay for him.
Right.
You write about your friend Beth that lost her son. It'll never be okay that her son's not here, but
right.
It's accepting that even though it's not really acceptable. And that's where I love the tension of counseling and hearing people's stories is like, it's a yes and a no. And the paradox of even like the gospel and the hard and the good and accepting something that's not acceptable. And really, I feel like realizing that we only have one perspective. We only see one little snapshot, one view of it. And that's not to minimize your pain or anybody else's pain, but it's to know there still could be good there. What would you say to the person who's struggling to let go of their grief? They feel, like you said, like I should hold on to it, and to let it go would mean that I'm not honoring them, or I didn't really love them. And so I ought to make my life miserable. What would you say?
I would not ever ask anybody to let go of their grief, because I don't think it's possible. I think grieving will be a part of my life for the rest of my life. So I don't know if that is a right answer. I just know that for me, having experienced grief, I would say, I think it's too much of a demand of ourselves that we let go of grief. So maybe even that will help someone. Maybe someone's been like, I've been trying to let go of my grief. And maybe just to hear someone say, like, I don't think that's the goal, actually. I think to me, not needing to let go of grief, and actually I've learned to let it come when it comes, because it's going to come. Yeah. That's the one thing I've learned about grief, is like, it's going to come when it comes. Yeah. I mean, I was sitting on an airplane not long ago, and my father, there is a man who walked onto the airplane that looked exactly like my father. And I'm just sitting there, and I look up from where I'm sitting, and all of a sudden tears just started to fall into my lap. Because I was triggered by this man who looked like my father. Now, my father's been in heaven since 2017. I should be used to it, right? Like, that he's gone? No. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I'll never be able to let go of grief. I will say the waves of grief come over me less often as time has put some space there. But on his birthday, I still cry. On the anniversary of his death, I still cry. Certain things trigger me. I cry. I want to cry right now. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's so I don't think you need to let go of your grief. I would say this though, you can and will and should continue to hold your grief and have it, and also give yourself the permission to love your life. And that's where you need to have the belief that there are nuances and that you're going to hold both. And I would suggest, where maybe the joy has, if you're looking at a scale, I mean, just kind of hold your hands up like a scale, where maybe the grief has been tipping the scale really high, you start working with the Lord to make that joy scale side come up, right? Mm-hmm. And that those things are at least equal in your life. And then what happens if in 3 more years, as the Lord's working with you, as you go to great counseling, what if the joy side starts getting higher? Mm-hmm. That to me would be such a powerful thing that would happen. And I believe it can. I really do.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Yeah. So the greater the loss, the greater the joy.
Yeah. So to me, I just feel like these are the things that we as human beings can work for in our life, can work towards. And I just believe that God can help us with that.
I love how you say that. You know, there's grief is like a fingerprint. Every loss is different. And I think in America, we don't really know how to grieve. And one of the key people in my life that I've lost is my grandfather. And he died in 2016. And he was just like an absolute cheerleader for me. He loved learning about counseling. He loved hearing about marriage counseling. It was just, I just loved my conversations with him. And when he died, I was actually like really happy for him that he died, because he would not have like liked his life if he realized like how he was living. And I actually miss him more now than I do then, which is so surprising to me, because I feel like our grief should be less and less. But sometimes I feel like it, like you say about maybe it's just hurt. You know, I think sometimes we realize that what that person meant to us, or what that loss truly looks like. And grief is so multidimensional. And so if you're listening, you know, maybe just being willing to give yourself permission to feel, instead of trying to squish it all down and hop over it, is to really go through it, because you might discover some amazing things. And I wouldn't take, I'm grateful for the pain that I feel. And maybe you feel the same about your dad, because to me, it just means what an amazing person he was and still is in many ways.
Yeah. And I think for me, I think about how I can help people from this point forward, because I do believe that restored joy and more life in our bodies comes when we can, I don't know. I keep thinking like pay it forward, but that's like a really, that's not even a good enough phrase, using for what I mean. Yeah.
Story.
Right. Using your life. I mean, honestly, that's one of the reasons why I was so raw in the book, The Hard Good, because if I was going to really use my life in some way to help someone else, then I wanted to really do it, you know, not just do it sort of halfway. And I will say that it has to hear messages from people, to hear their stories, to hear it, just, it does something inside of me. And I think this is why, you know, this is why this is help. This has helped me. And I think that that's something that, you know, it's sort of a legacy piece, I guess, a little bit.
Indeed. Indeed. It's such a good book. And thank you so much for your willingness to be vulnerable and open. And, you know, the Bible tells us that that's how we overcome, is the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And so it's such a sweet book to read. It is one of those ones that I will keep coming back to time and time again. And if Lisa Turker says that, then, you know, by all means, I feel the same way.
Well, I'm honored, and I hope people get it and then bring it to your office and process it with you. That's a powerful, powerful thing to do.
Thank you. Where can we find you?
You can find me at lisawhittle.com. That's about the easiest place. We've got all the book stuff, got all the podcast stuff, got the speaking stuff, free stuff. Anything you want is found there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on Thrive, Mental Health, and the Art of Living Free. Make sure to visit my website where you can subscribe to get the show notes, and be sure to subscribe on Apple, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. That way you never miss a show. While you're at it, help me out by adding some stars to the rating and tell a friend about the show. Have a great week.